Becky Matlobo is a partner of Frans Cronje at Frans Cronje Private Clients. He's the economist in the team. He's also on the board of the Social Research Foundation and at the moment studying in California, but he's back home and we have an opportunity to catch up on the latest developments. And boy, are they so important. Hey, Becky, overnight, Donald Trump has decided to add another 10% onto the already announced 30% tariff on South African goods going into the US. We know it's 250 billion rand that has been quantified as the number that goes in there. I guess the big question for exporters is, should they be panicking? Should they be rushing around trying to find other venues for their goods? Or is this another taco trade? Trump always chickens out.
Good morning, Alec. It's a great pleasure to be in your show and good morning to your viewers and listeners. I do think if you were to look at the quantum of those exports that go to the United States, South Africa exports about 30% of platinum group metals to the United States, about 20% of vehicles as well as vehicle-related parts, and about 15% of that of iron and steel. As a proportion of South Africa's total exports, that's about 8.4%. That is a significant number. However, I do believe that other countries, other markets could pick up, for example, the shortfall that it will be left by the 49% from 30% earlier this week to 10% overnight. I do think there are other markets that could pick this up. However, there are indeed consequences for South Africa. What this means, though, is that South Africa continues to be that of a sub 1% economy, which we've seen over the past decade. It means that it is more so the case currently, given what's been going on overnight.
So our economic growth rate has been pathetic, we know, for well over a decade. I've often spoken with your partner, Frans Cronje, on this subject, and he said America could be a good friend, but now we are blowing that opportunity. And how relevant is that in the context of where we are today, and is it something that can still be rescued? We've got 3 weeks.
America could indeed be a great friend. Let's draw on, for example, the BRICS summit that happened between the 6th as well as the 7th of July. America is a great friend to one of those countries, such as that of India. America contributes about 60% of foreign direct investment towards India, and South Africa could also have that relationship. That number there, Alec, could take South Africa's fixed investment level, which has been the consequence of the country seeing a 0.8% growth rate over the past decade, which sits at about 15%. That's the commitment by businesses to set up shop in South Africa and to invest in the country. That number sits about 15% as a proportion of GDP. Where it should be is about 25% if you look at other emerging markets, which is the norm. That's where the country should be. And in order to plug that gap from about 15% to 25%, you can attract American investments to the country that would lift the fixed investment number and as a consequence of that, the GDP growth number. And in order to be a friend of the United States, the Americans have been quite clear on their three policy stances, which are non-negotiable from their perspective. I spent some time in Washington, D.C., speaking to people that have eyes on South Africa, and they've been crystal clear on what have been the issues in the country. The first one is that South Africa's empowerment policy. It's all well, and it's good for a sovereign nation like South Africa to have its own policies. However, what it should understand is that those policies have consequences. And from the American perspective, those policies are seen as a tax on investment, particularly South Africa's empowerment policy. Before they even commit and set up shop in the country, they tax a certain percentage of their board as well as their commitment in the country. The second part is if you look at the Expropriation Act, which allows for the expropriation of property, fixed or immovable assets, below market value. Say you were to buy a home, for example, in this beautiful place here in Johannesburg, worth about 2 million, and the government were to expropriate your property for about 1 million, gives you 1 million instead of your 2 million. That 1 million has indeed been expropriated, which makes South Africa uncompetitive on the global stage compared to other nations. This is not only the opinion of the Americans, but this opinion of other nations as well that looks at South Africa and sees that it's very difficult to commit investment here in the country. The third point, which the Americans have been crystal clear on, is South Africa's alliance with that of Iran, which it sees as a national security threat to itself as well as that of its allies. And perfectly aligning with that India example there is that if you were to look at India's comments in the BRICS summit, they were not did not go out their way as what Mr. Ramaphosa did by condemning the United States as well as Israel for what happened with the 12-day war and towards Iran, but instead were very sensible in the way they approached that summit, said very sensible things, things that you were supposed to say in that committee. But the South African government, rather that of Cyril Ramaphosa, went out of its way, even beyond what the declaration of the BRICS summit was, to condemn the United States, in which the United States took that and didn't read it as well, resulting in South Africa seeing an additional 10% tariff hike from the 30%.
It's an interesting point you make there about the Iran relationship. It seems that our country should be, or Cyril should be, channeling his inner Modi from India, not his inner Khamenei from Iran, and just wake up to the reality of how the world is, perhaps not as he wants the world to be. Because the potential, I guess, here is not just losing a friend, but if we lose that market, there's got to be some suffering.
South Africa is well within its right to form relations with any nation that it deems so. We can have relations with China. We can have relations with Russia. That's not the key concern for the Americans. The key concern for Americans is that we're closely aligning ourselves with a country that we're actually not getting, in terms of the hard numbers of economic performance, in terms of trade, with that of Iran. And again, there of India, India trades with everyone. It doesn't have hard chances in terms of its foreign policy. And with that, it allows the investment from the United States to be committed within India. However, what we've seen towards the government, really within the South African government, is that they choose to double down on issues that are actually not winning positions. My read from this, Alec, is that the South African government moves at a very snail pace at addressing significant issues that it faces. Even if it is towards its detriment. About 10 years ago, when I started my career, it was told that if you don't fix the electricity situation, you will see high levels of load shedding in the country that will be detrimental to your governorship in local municipality elections in Gauteng, as well as that in the metros such as that of Johannesburg, as well as other metros around the country. It was also told, as of last year, that if you do not improve the material circumstances of the Africans, your number come election day would sit at about 40%, which was indeed the case. It continues to double down on these policy positions, even when it is towards its detriment. And you can also see that from the global stage, where it closely aligns itself with countries that do not have economic potential as well as that of beneficial for that of South Africa, compared to that of the United States, of which you've also started this conversation of, where we can actually enjoy a trade surplus. We've been enjoying a trade surplus with the United States since 2010, where our goods initially were not tariffed at 0% to where they currently stand at about 40%. There's grave consequences for that. But the catastrophic risk that I've seen some analysts suggest, I don't think that's largely going to be the case. South Africa will continue to be a low growth environment. And this will just be more of the case currently, given what has happened over the past week.
Do we not believe it as South Africans that we deserve a better future? Because we vote these guys that even their partners in the Government of National Unity call a criminal syndicate. We keep voting them into power. Is there something wrong with us that we don't see a brighter future for ourselves? Because it seems so damn obvious.
Well, I think actually South Africans are very sensible in how they choose to vote. I actually see this in the polling data, and I actually can engage with quite a lot of South Africans. I come from rural South Africa, rural parts of the Eastern Cape, up in the mountains where the nearest town is about an hour away, the nearest hospital is about an hour and 30 minutes away. And I engaged with my elders as well. And from their perspective, life did and definitely was better for them in the early years of South Africa's democracy. And they can remember that their lives were better in terms of the electrification of the country, where it declined from about 49% of the South African population that went to bed without electricity. That number declined to below 20%. The number of jobs that were created between 1994 as well as that of 2007, starting at about 8 million and nearly doubling that of 2008, as well as the rolling out of service delivery. That was a success. Then I look at the young, for example, that leave rural parts of South Africa, go to the urban fringes in South Africa, and they're absolutely faced with a dire situation where it's absolutely rough to go about your day. You start off in your morning, you have no power. You try to go out to your home to go towards a taxi, and there's protests happening outside because they haven't been powerful over the past week. If you look at, for example, what happened in Soweto about 2 weeks ago. Those are the day-to-day issues that South Africans, ordinary South Africans, face. And the consequence of that is indeed an ANC where it was performing well, recorded about nearly 70% of electoral support in 2004 to where it currently is polling, according to the Social Research Foundation, at about 40%. They're very sensible. And I think it's actually quite remarkable that this country hasn't seen high levels of extreme violence, which often happens in other emerging markets, such as that of coup d'etats. That hasn't happened in South Africa. And I think that speaks to the thinking of ordinary South Africans, especially the young, who have an unemployment rate of about 72%. That's quite high. When I'm based in the United States and I see the young people there, they have an unemployment rate of about 9%. Most people there are employed. And the most amazing thing that I see there is an unemployment sign. And I think it's quite dire that that's not seen in South Africa. And that's largely due to the doubling down of the losing positions that our government continues to choose. It's like watching a soccer team. My nephew was talking about Bafana as I was driving here to the offices, looking to qualify for the FIFA World Cup. And the way that we spoke about these issues, like you're watching a soccer match and one team, instead of going to the other end of the field, simply goes towards its own goalpost and scores against its own keeper. That own keeper being normal South Africans, normal businesses that actually want a better life and actually are sensible in how to approach these issues. And that's not what we're seeing with the South African government.
How do we get rid of them then? How do we change the players on the field?
It's on two fronts. Number one front is that I've already mentioned, for example, voting patterns of the country, but we can already see private industry finding solutions to navigate this very harsh environment in South Africa. Comparing the two, the resilience of the South African private sector, number one, is that what we're seeing is an uptick in private electrification in the country, where it was sitting at about 5% before stage 8 load shedding, as well as now just slightly becoming improved, but our energy availability factor is below 60%. We're seeing an increase in private electricity generation in the country. We're seeing, for example, if you look at our rail networks, which are not that great, still managed to operate in some aspects. But if you look at, for example, if you go on your highways, you're seeing a lot more trucks on the road. And the volume of movement of goods in the country has moved from rail towards that of trucks, as well as that of private security in the country, which has overtaken public security, the SAPS, the South African Police Service. And that's largely the solutions that we're seeing from the private industry. What I would like to see, though, is that for the people that can't afford to opt out the South African environment, be it that from the political realm or be it that of the economic realm, for those lives to also improve. And that can only come from a policy direction in the country, domestically, as well as that of internationally. So the South African government this week, it's quite interesting to see how they've managed to approach their conversation in the United States. What they should have went there and said is that we have about 80% of PM platinum group metals in the country. We'll incentivize your multinational corporations to invest in the country and we'll give them tax credits, which would allow people to be employed in the country. For those particular individuals that can't afford to opt out, these are the people that live in townships, for example, but still have the same aspirations as your suburban areas here in Johannesburg, as well as that of Cape Town. These are one and the same people that want common things and bread and butter issues that we also are talking about in our conversation here. Those people's needs need to be addressed, and for the South African government to actually address those concerns. We can speak a little bit about abstract about these numbers here, but these concrete numbers as to what when we're talking about fixed investment levels about 25% and a GDP growth rate about 4%, what does that actually mean? Well, it means that you would see about more than 4 million people more employed currently compared to the 16.7 million, as well as that of an unemployment rate of about 16%, as opposed to that of a 32.9% unemployment level. That's actual real life individuals their daily lives that could have been better, as well as that of the ANC, which by our numbers and my calculations could have had a support level of about 60%, as opposed to where current polls at about 40%, still maintaining its majority in Gauteng as well as KwaZulu-Natal. Those are actual solutions, actually putting down the hard trade negotiations that would have allowed South Africa to actually see and realize that economic potential.
So it boggles the mind, really, when you explain it in that way. It is the economy. It's always been the economy. People are always going to vote, well, eventually going to vote from their pockets or opt out if those who are making the rules are not making the rules correctly, if they're scoring their own goals as they have been doing. But if you look ahead, how long is it going to take? And I think this is probably what a lot of South Africans are saying. How long do we have to continue to muddle through in this age where everybody knows what's happening? Everybody sees General Mkhwanazi unveiling or ripping the plaster off a festering sore that we know is there. We know about the KZN construction mafia. It's not something out of fantasy land. And now he tells us that very senior politicians have been fiddling around here on a very important organization that seems to have been making great progress. It reminds one of the Scorpion. So when do South Africans, is there any historical precedent perhaps to give us some insight into when we are going to make the changes that we need to get the prosperity that we deserve?
In terms of policy currently, I cannot say that we're moving in that direction. Concretely, in terms of the hard numbers as well as the policies gazetted, I would say it looks a little bit too far from us to actually address those concerns. But how long will it take from where we currently are to where we would be is about 20 years or so. If you look at those numbers that I gave you there, a base of calculations that I made, had South Africa continued to actually maintain its growth path of which it had from 1994 until 2008. Between 2008 and currently, that's about 17 years. And that same unemployment number of 16% is where the country would have been today, currently. That's the same unemployment numbers that you see in other emerging markets, which are coming close to about 10%. And I think it's actually quite easy for South Africa to achieve those levels 20 years from now. And I think in order to achieve that, my read of this is that South Africa has enough core defunct power stations to actually be refitted just on the energy situation alone. If we remove that risk, that unlocks South Africa's GDP performance from where it is at sub 1% to where it could be at about 2 to 3%. We've fixed our empowerment policy as well as that of actually putting back market value in the expropriation clause. Other countries indeed do have expropriation or compensation. However, they do compensate you for the property that you own. The South African government chooses to, if it were to expropriate policy, which it definitely needs to do so, would pay you below that of the market value. In order to implement that back would attract a lot of the investment back into the country, which I think would allow South Africa's investment level as well as that of its growth potential to increase from where it is in its investment number from 15% to where it needs to be at about 25%, as well as that for that economic potential number to be where it currently is from my number, which hasn't changed from February, at about 0.8% to where it would have been and where it needs to be at about 4 to 5%. So I think it is easy for us to actually achieve these numbers.
Becky, aren't you frustrated? And I'll tell you what frustrates me. When I have a look at the map of the latest and greatest oil district in the world, or gas and oil district in the world, which is at Namibia, where there's been massive investments there. To the north, where the border goes down into Namibian space, plenty oil rigs going crazy. To the south, where South Africa owns exactly the same opportunities, nothing. And it goes all the way down the coast. This could be so prosperous a country. To me, just seeing that obvious issue frustrates me because you've got greedy politicians, it appears, in between who have got the wrong policies. And so the people of South Africa are to the detriment of the people of South Africa. You're an economist. And you are based in the US at the moment doing studying to get even smarter than you are at the moment. Does this not frustrate the heck out of you?
It is frustrating. I think it's frustrating for any normal person that goes about their day that you're seeing these potential just passing you by and actually still also laying there. So you mentioned there Namibia and tying this back to the United States issues, that the United States sees that its investment towards Africa has largely been behind that of China, if you look at fixed investment towards Africa, and is indeed trying to correct that by having a look at improving relations with Namibia as well as that of Angola. And should South Africa, the South African government, this includes that of the GNU, not actually table the hardline trade negotiations with the United States, as well as trade with other nations, the United States will continue to look at other African countries and just simply leave South Africa behind. It does see South Africa as an importance, geostrategic importance, given that the Cape Town is a choke point between the South Transatlantic, as well as the volume of the vessels that are passing by that of the Cape, which have increased by 89% compared to that of last year. Look at that of the Suez Canal, for example, where the vessels have declined quite sharply. And so the Cape, for example, with ships passing by, is about three times higher than what you see in the Suez Canal. That is actually what's on the table. And it is indeed frustrating for sensible people, for sensible businesses to actually see that and to see it to pass by. But the issue here, it largely remains with the government that chooses to support a losing team, that sees a scoreboard going up and up and up in terms of the 10-0 score, and continues to watch that score go in the wrong direction where it actually should have been and where it needs to be.
Becky Matlobo is an economist with France Cronier Private Clients. He's France's partner there. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.